720 WGN. I'm John Landecker. There's a new documentary coming out called The Tree Man. Filmed over 3 years in 4 countries with more than 80 interviews from entertainers with a combined of combined 61 Grammy Awards. Why is it called The Tree Man? Well, we'll let you know, because he's one of the greatest rock and roll pianists and keyboardists ever, and also a decorated environmentalist, and that's all contained in the film The Tree Man. And we got The Tree Man here. Hey, Chuck, how are you?
Brother John, it's so great to speak with you, man. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, Chuck, my pleasure. You know, going back to the Allman Brothers Band, I have an Allman Brothers story, if you want to hear it. Remember coming to Chicago Stadium somewhere in the mid-70s? Were you touring with them then?
I was, yeah.
Yeah, all right.
Probably, let's see, what year do you think it might have been?
Oh, God. 76, 77, 70s. Somewhere in there? 74, 5, 8?
A little before that, I think 74, yeah.
Okay, 74, that'll do. So I'm on the radio at a radio station, not this one, but another one at the time, and it's a rock station, and it's a big signal. And I get this message that in Georgia, the Allman Brothers apparently can't pick up a lot of rock and roll stations, so they listen to this Clear Channel station out of Chicago, and they're going to come, and would I like to go to the concert after I get off the air at 10 o'clock? And I go, well, yeah. So they pick me up. I go, you must have been there. I didn't meet anybody. I was just standing behind large trash cans that were full of beer. And cans of beer, not, you know. So then Greg Allman says, let's go back to the hotel. I said, okay. So we go back to the hotel, which happens to be the Holiday Inn. And he goes, would you like some sherry? You know, sherry, the drink?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. He's got this silver bottle of sherry, which is, you know, I'm sure it's great, but it's not exactly your rock star.
It's like a lady's drink. What is he doing with sherry? I don't know.
And then we had a couple of those, and he said, listen, I got to leave. I got to go meet a girl. That's my entire Allman Brothers story.
Well, I bet he took the rest of that sherry to the girl, is my guess.
You think so? Gosh, Chuck, I really enjoyed the film, The Tree Man. And not just because of your involvement with the Allman Brothers and touring and recording with the Rolling Stones, but also, you know, your relationship with your wife and also the environmental part of this, which is extremely cool. How many acres do you devote to this tree project of yours, if that's the right term?
Yeah, sure. Rosie and I have now are up to about 4,000 acres. And we love what we do. You know, it's a great responsibility. We try to really, you know, manage this thing properly and with environmental sensitivity involved. But it's my other passion, John. It really is. Yeah. You know, I, especially now in COVID world when I'm an unemployed musician, you know. I have to say that kind of secretly, I've always wished I could take, say, a year off and just work on the place. And you know, that's what I've been doing. I have been doing some musical things in between. You know, you got some of the virtual gigs. I've been on some long-distance recording sessions and some other things. But, you know, my focus in the last several months has been working the land and loving every minute of it.
Let me make sure I got this right. Is the main focus of the tree project is to reuse trees that have dead trees, for lack of a better term?
Well, not necessarily. No, okay. You know what I call our mission is long term sustainable forestry. Mm-hmm. John, when you think about what trees and forests give us, you know, let's go down the list a little bit. Materials to make things like books, magazines, newspapers, packaging products. All organic stuff,
right?
Materials to make lumber to build our homes, schools, and churches. By the way, there's a new technique that's coming to the States now called CLT, cross laminated timber, in which you can now architects can design and builders can build up to 15 stories using just wood. And this is fascinating because think about it now. Wood is sequestering carbon. Mm-hmm. And when you go beyond the products that we mentioned, think about what else it does. It cleans our air, cleans our water, provides home and shelter to all manner of wildlife. And so, you know, for me, it's not just about the actual practice of forestry, which we certainly employ, but it's also about the big picture.
Right. You can see in this documentary called The Tree Man your commitment to this project, not only in what you say about it, but the equipment that's used, watching the process happen. You're out there getting your hands dirty, so to speak, and it's just very impressive. And I think a really cool thing that you would make that as equal part, if not more so, of this documentary, The Tree Man, as the other portions, and obviously the most publicity portion of it, which is recording with the Rolling Stones, the Allman Brothers, and just about every other band that ever existed, by the way.
not quite every band.
Well,
but thank you. Pretty darn close.
Pretty darn close, Chuck. I mean, come on. I was trying to keep track of everybody while I was watching this thing, and I'm writing group after group after group, and then there's Billy Bob Thornton comes on and says, you know, Chuck's the kind of guy that makes you feel bad about yourself.
I've been very, very blessed in my musical career and to have worked with all these different great artists, and I had some moments that are just so memorable and so cherished. And to have this thing that's 180 degrees away from that really, I think, helps keeps me grounded, helps keep my focus in line. I'm blessed to have that.
Well, we're going to go into the history. Gosh, I got, you know, a lot of things to ask about the Stones and everybody else who's in this documentary, which is called The Tree Man. Woo! How about this one? Oh, man. That's why they'd be the greatest rock and roll band in the world. 720 WGN. John Landecker, thanks for joining us. Chuck Lavelle is, I'm hoping, playing keyboards on both of those cuts that I played. One's from Stripped, and the other is from, oh, come on, John, Flashpoint. Are you on those, Chuck?
Absolutely.
I am
on both of those.
Man.
You got it right, my friend.
Oh, those are two of my favorite Stones projects. Both of those albums.
Yeah, live,
man.
Live records. Yeah. And let me tell you something, my friend. When I heard those two tracks you just played, I was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
I miss it so much. I miss my mates. I miss my fellow musicians and all the staff with the Rolling Stones. So, you know, who knows in the COVID world where we're going to be. But I will say this, and this is no prediction by any means, but 2022 does mark the band's 60th anniversary. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, that's amazing. You joined the Rolling Stones in what year?
1982.
Which brings me to, you know, remember back when the Stones started and everybody started and it was like you had a drummer, you had three guitars maybe, and a singer, right? I mean, wasn't that your basic rock configuration in like 1965 or so?
Yes, with some exception. You know, keyboard players do filter in there.
But that's true.
That was kind of the standard rock thing.
And now, how many singers and musicians do the Stones travel with?
Well, the core band is six, and that would be the four Rolling Stones and Daryl Jones, our bass player, and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do have a couple of background singers. We have some horn players. You know, they're not on every song. They come in and out.
Right.
And they're all extremely talented musicians, and I miss all of those guys, too. But, you know, the core band is a six-piece.
The I saw a documentary, a concert thing of the Stones in South America heading towards a show in Cuba, which was just outstanding. Can you tell us about you were on that tour, I'm guessing.
Yes, what an incredible experience it was.
I mean, you're playing
skip over to Cuba. You know, this was when Obama had just opened up some relationships with the country of Cuba.
Yeah.
And we arranged to do a concert, a free concert there. And you can imagine the logistics of getting all this equipment and everybody and staff and band to Havana. And set it all up in the middle of a baseball field in the middle of nowhere, basically. We had trouble getting some cranes, as I recall, and somehow at the last minute we were able to import a couple of cranes that we needed to set up all the scaffolding and the sound and lights and everything. But we put on a full production. It was a free concert just for the people of Cuba. And let me tell you, man, what was amazing was, of course, that music and all rock music has been banned in that country for decades, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we had 750,000 people, and as we were playing the set, you look out into the audience, and a lot of these folks who could not speak a word of English are mouthing every word to every song. It was fantastic.
Well, the documentary is awesome, and also takes you exactly onto the streets to establish exactly the what you just referenced, that rock and roll was banned in Cuba for over a decade. You know, the Stones obviously had never been there. No American or English band or rock band of any kind or origin had ever been to Cuba. And the logistics were unbelievable. I just am so fascinated by the enormity of touring. It's astounding. I mean, you've got trailer trucks and who knows how many people in the crew, and somebody's got to coordinate all this and setting up the audio, and it's just, to me, it's mind-boggling. Does it seem that way when you're in the middle of it, or is it just like, you know, that's what we do, you know?
No, that was so special. There's been a few shows like that in our history that you would say, wow, how did we pull that off, you know? And I have to say that the government of Cuba was very cooperative. You know, they could have not been so, but they were. They wanted this to happen. You know, there was a wonderful feeling of freedom and new relations and everything. And it was just a special time. You know, a couple of others I could cite to you back in 1990. As we know, the wall fell in 1989,
right?
And we were doing the Steel Wheels tour, and we came to Europe, and because the wall had fallen, we started doing shows in former Eastern Bloc countries. The one that stands out to me is in Prague. We did a show for 126,000 people. I'll never forget, the posters were so beautiful. The posters read, "Tanks roll out, Stones roll in."
That's awesome. That is just awesome. I can't, you know, I've snuck onto the stage at, well, the Stones were in Chicago at the, at Soldier Field somewhere in the, I think it was the late 70s, and Journey opened for them, and I did get to peek onto the stage with, you know, where the Journey set was being set up, and looking out on a crowd that is that large, and that's really nothing compared to the numbers that you're talking about, is just, and got to be an amazing experience. And then to have their energy come back at you has just got to double the excitement of what you're doing. I mean, how could you possibly be bored, you know?
Well, we certainly are not bored. And as you kind of hinted to, John, it's kind of a feedback loop.
Yeah.
You know, we feed the audience feeds us, and it goes round and round and round. And it's an incredible feeling. It really is. And it's from my perspective, you know, I've been blessed with a great career, but it's so weird that I can think back and say, well, the normal audience for a Rolling Stones concert is like 50, 55,000, right. You know, that's the norm. I mean, and then you have the exceptions that we've been talking about, some that are, that way exceed that. The biggest one that we did was actually on Copacabana Beach. And that was a free concert, mind you. But we had over 1.5 million people all up and down Copacabana Beach and spreading out into all the streets, the side streets. It was unbelievable.
Let's go back to your roots there in with the Allman Brothers. Talk about, because that's one of the greatest bands ever, and Jessica is one of the great instrumentals of all time, and I believe that's your partially your contribution, if not totally, to their that album. Talk about that, the Allman Brothers, and getting together with them, and what it was like in the early days, and what the point was where everything went from "We're the Allman Brothers" to "We're the Allman Brothers." You know what I mean? Like when it really hit.
Well, the story is that I had made my way through the ranks at Capricorn Records in Macon, Georgia. You'll recall that Duane Allman had his tragic motorcycle accident in 1971.
Right.
The band went out without a replacement for Duane to fulfill some obligations as a five-piece band. Lots of pressure on Dickie Betts to play those slide parts, which he was certainly not used to doing, but he did such an admirable job of. And they came off of that tour, you know, mentally, physically, emotionally exhausted, and Greg wanted to do a solo record, and I got called to do the solo record. Laid Back was the name of that, and it became a very successful record. It was a wonderful experience. But during the after hours, these jam sessions would occur where all the Allman Brothers would come down and would just, you know, have a good time, play a blues song, play an Allman Brothers song, or just pick a key and have a jam. And after about 3 weeks of this, I get a call from the band's manager saying, "I want to see you in my office." And I'm thinking, well, what did I do to screw up, you know? And I go in, and there's all the guys in the band, and eventually the shoe dropped, and they said, you know, things are feeling pretty good. How would you feel about joining our band?
Wow.
And, John, I was barely 20. I had just turned 20 years old.
Man.
And it was just this incredible opportunity, this incredible huge step for me. You know, my focus was the music, man. I mean, the Allman Brothers were making great, great music before I got there.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, you know, I would like to think that, of course, Let's say this. You never replaced Duane Allman. You could not have added, at the time at least, you could not have added another guitar player and said, okay, this is it. And so I think, you know, by accident that I was playing piano with those guys jamming, that it took a different direction and something that was hopefully refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
And something that they felt good about. And so we completed the record Brothers and Sisters. It had the song Ramblin' Man on it. It had, as you mentioned, Jessica. It had a song called Wasted Words. It was a pretty big hit.
Yep.
And then we embarked on a world tour for the next couple of years.
Wow. Well, Chuck, thank you so much for being with us. I'm a big fan of, obviously, your music contributions, and now that I've seen the documentary, an admirer of your environmental contributions as well. Chuck LaBelle, who we've been talking to, and really only scratched the surface as to his his musical contributions on keyboard. You got to check this film out, because the guy, I'm serious, has played with literally Bruce Hornsby, okay? The Black Crowes, Bob Seger, Leanne Womack, Train. You can visit a website to get a list of theaters and virtual cinema options if you care to. That is, I'll try to spell this. It's long. This is all one word, Chuck, C-H-U-C-K. LEAVELL, the tree man.com.